This is the Africa service of Vatican Radio.
Welcome to our half-hour daily program for Africa.
In this edition today, our segment dedicated to the family, we shall also bring you our promo on your feedback of our program. But first, our bulletin of church news. My name is Kanyanta Godfrey Kampamba. Doctors on Saturday evening gave their brief medical update about the health of Pope Francis. According to the press briefing by the Holy See Press Office, the clinical condition of the Holy Father remains stable, confirming the progress observed in the past week. High-flow oxygen therapy continues, progressively reducing the need for non-invasive mechanical ventilation during the night. But the Holy See Press Office said, though, that the Holy Father still requires hospital medical care as well as physiotherapy and respiratory physiotherapy. These therapies, it said, are currently showing further gradual improvements. The Holy See Press Office also informed journalists that Pope Francis spent most of his day going through his therapy, praying, resting and doing some work. On Friday, 14th March, Pope Francis marked a month since his hospitalization at Rome's Gemelli Hospital for double pneumonia. So, generally speaking, the Pope's recovery is progressing steadily well, even though the Holy See Press Office has reported that doctors have advised that the Holy Father continues to be hospitalized because there is need for more time in order to ensure that the improvement he is showing is sustained. The Saturday evening medical press briefing also mentioned the fact that the next medical bulletin is expected to be released on Tuesday or Wednesday, but the Holy See Press Office will continue to provide journalists with some general information during the evenings. Since the Pope has been in hospital, the Angelus prayer and the traditional blessing that he delivers from the window overlooking St. Peter's Square has been released as a written text, and this Sunday has not been different. From Gemelli Hospital, the Pope's Angelus reflection was a contemplation of a period of trial that he himself is experiencing at the moment. The general picture of his reflection was a praise to God who never abandons us, and he highlighted the shining signs of hope that illuminate hospitals and places of care. Christopher Wells has this report.
In the mystery of the Transfiguration, Jesus immerses himself in prayer and becomes radiant with light, said Pope Francis in remarks prepared for the weekly Angelus. The Pope explained, in this way, Jesus shows the disciples what is hidden behind the gestures he performs in their midst, the light of his infinite love. This thought prompted the Holy Father to reflect on the period of trial that he, along with so many others who are sick, is undergoing at this time. Our bodies are weak, he said, but even like this, nothing can prevent us from loving, praying, giving ourselves, being shining signs of hope for one another in faith. Pope Francis emphasized the light that shines in hospitals and places of care, the love that illuminates all of those places where the humblest services are performed. And he invited everyone to join him in praising the Lord, who never abandons us, and who, in times of sorrow, places people beside us who reflect a ray of his love. The Pope thanked all those who are praying for him, especially the many children, including some who have come to Gemelli Hospital, to demonstrate their closeness to the Pope. The Pope loves you, the Holy Father said, and is always looking forward to meeting you. As usual, Pope Francis ended his Angelus reflection with prayers, first for peace throughout the world, especially in those countries wounded by war, tormented Ukraine, Palestine, Israel, Lebanon, Myanmar, Sudan, and the Democratic Republic of Congo. Finally, Pope Francis called for prayers for the Church as it continues the implementation phase of the synodal journey. I'm Christopher Wells.
Working from the Gemelli Hospital, Pope Francis has approved a 3-year implementation and evaluation process for the reform project that aims to make the church a more welcoming and responsive place. The Vatican Office for the Synodal Gathering of Bishops on Saturday released a timetable through 2028 to implement the reforms and said the Holy Father had approved the calendar last week. This is contained in a letter written by the Secretary General of the Synod's General Secretariat, Cardinal Mario Greig, in which he says that this special post-synod ecclesial assembly will be held in the Vatican in October 2028 as the culmination of the 3-year process accompanying the implementation of the outcomes of the synod. Pope Francis has sent a telegram of condolences to North Macedonia for the victims of a nightclub fire. Addressed to the Archbishop of Skopje, Monsignor Kiro Stojanov, and signed by the Secretary of State, Cardinal Pietro Parolin, Pope Francis expressed his condolences to the families who lost their loved ones, mostly young people, in a fire that broke out in the city of Kokan. The Pope expressed his profound condolences and assured the bereaved families of his spiritual closeness. Pope Francis concluded his message by praying for those who lost their lives and invoked the Lord's comfort for those suffering from the consequences of such a difficult hardship. At least 59 people died and around 155 were injured after fire tore through a nightclub in North Macedonia. Hundreds had gathered at the Pulse nightclub in the town of Kokan, east of the capital Skopje, to watch local act DNK perform when the blaze broke out in the early hours of Sunday morning. The music duo are reported to be among those killed. The ages of the victims range from 16 to 24, according to state media MIA. The majority of those who died were trampled in the crowd crash. UNICEF is raising the alarm that the resurgence of conflict in Eastern Democratic Republic of the Congo, DRC, has forced more than 850,000 people to flee their homes. Nearly half of these are children, and many of the displaced people are living in precarious conditions, taking shelter in schools, churches, or in the open, with limited access to clean water and sanitation, health care, and education. UNICEF is actually warning that the ongoing violence has led to a sharp rise in grave violations against children. These violations, UNICEF says, include sexual violence, killings, maiming, and the recruitment and use of children by armed groups. Meantime, at least 242 million children in 85 countries had their schooling interrupted last year because of heat waves, cyclones, flooding, and other extreme weather. The United Nations Children's Fund, UNICEF, said in a new report recently. The United States has announced that it is expelling South Africa's ambassador to Washington, with Secretary of State Marco Rubio describing him as a race-baiting politician. In a post on X, the former Twitter, Rubio accused Ibrahim Rasu of hating the United States and President Donald Trump and said the ambassador was no longer welcome in their great country. In his post on Friday, Rubio linked to an article from the right-wing outlet Breitbart that quoted some of Rasu's recent remarks made during an online lecture about the Trump administration. At the event, Rasu said Trump was mobilizing a supremacism and trying to project white victimhood as a dog whistle as the white population faced becoming a minority in the United States. The Office for South Africa's President on Saturday called the decision by the United States regrettable, adding that the country remained committed to building a mutually beneficial relationship with the United States. The rare move by the United States marks the latest development in rising tensions between the two countries. Angola is under fire after it denied entry to several senior African political figures set to attend a conference hosted by the country's main opposition party. UNITA said it had invited the politicians, including Tanzanian opposition leader Tundu Lissu, Mozambique's Venancio Mondlane, and Botswana's former president Ian Khama, to a summit on democracy. At least 20 leaders and representatives from various political parties across Africa were denied entry, said Lissu. But according to a source from the Migration and Aliens Service, The expulsion was due to irregularities in the visa procedure, which prevented Mondlane and 13 other members of his entourage from entering the Angolan territory. You are tuned to the Daily Africa service of Vatican Radio.
And now our feature, family. Church in Africa as a family of God. Its people, challenges, values, and hopes.
My name is Father Paul Samasumo with your program, Family.
Today on Family, we'd like to bring you a repeat of a program that we aired early this year in January 2025. The year 2024 was the centenary celebration of Amica Cabral, a nationalist and Pan-African revolutionary leader of the liberation struggle in Guinea-Bissau and Cape Verde. Cabral was also a humanist, thinker, and a man of culture. Professor Filomeno Lopez, a professor of philosophy, a musician and media practitioner with Vatican News in the Portuguese section, has written extensively about the enduring legacy of Amica Cabral, and recently he organized a roundtable discussion at which the Vatican Secretary of State, Cardinal Pietro Parolin, made an extensive presentation. With us on Family to discuss Amica Cabral is Professor Filomeno. So, Professor, thank you very much for this time, and just to appreciate what you've been doing, writing and speaking about our liberation struggles in Africa. But this time you've been speaking and writing about Amica Cabral. Okay. Who exactly was Amica Cabral?
Well, he was a great freedom fighter, a great thinker as well, and he was the founder of the nationality of Guinea-Bissau and Cape Verde. But in reality, he was the one who also operated a lot in terms of whatever is about independence in the so-called Portuguese-speaking countries in Africa. Since this year, 2024, the last year, I mean, 2024 is, we were celebrating the centenary of his birth. So I thought it was also, looking at the situation going on in my country in terms of leadership, you know, and so I thought it was also something interesting to at least talk a little bit about him, but not more about, not such about himself, but what he did, his thoughts, and his philosophical backgrounds, and especially, and because I think on what he taught in terms of leadership and what he did, really, because he was the one who not just thought about things, but he was also the one who really did what he was thinking, and he was always the one who was saying what he was doing and doing what he was always saying as well, you know? So I think looking at the crisis of leadership that I'm seeing for so long in my country and also in the rest of the continent, I thought it will be okay to concentrate and see if there are things, aspects that we can still take in order to overcome the situations that we live in today in this question of the leadership that became very important issue for, I think, for the whole continent.
So I agree with you that it is important that Africans, especially the younger generation, need to know about our freedom fighters. And he was not just a freedom fighter, but he was a philosopher. Mm-hmm. He was a Pan-Africanist. He was everything for that part of West Africa, but also for Africa.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
As you say, he's well known. Mm-hmm. So what are some of the lessons that you think we can learn from him?
Well, I think the first is that he was the one. We always have to remember one thing, is that to be, in order to, first of all, to put Africans into the slavery, and then after, in colonization, apartheid systems, etc., that was a fruit. You remember that they transformed African culture, was transformed as a kind of folklore. There is no Africans does not have culture. That's what they say. No, So our culture was transforming into some kind of folklore. Our languages were transformed in dialects. So you don't have
a proper language.
Yeah, yeah. And religious and spirituality was transformed in a kind of superstition. So when they take you out, culture, language, and spirituality, you end up on what? An anthropological poverty. So whatever we have to do, even way we think and love, constantly imitating our masters in the past. So the revolution that Cabral started in Guinea-Bissau, etc., he started what he called la résistance culturelle, a resistance culturelle. So the independence was not a fight for that. It was a process which had four periods. What he called a resistencia cultural mean we have to take out some kind of cultural visions that these people put on us and go back to our roots, no? And dialogue with what we are now, and knowing that the future we want tomorrow in Africa, we cannot build it without our cultures, roots, but not also with just our culture. But without is impossible, because we can dream a culture without, you know, roots. And when he say roots, it means the people.
The people are the roots.
Yeah, the people are the roots. No? And the people have their own way of thinking, a way of seeing the reality, etc. So you cannot just take that for granted and start saying that, okay, I'm a Portuguese of the second class, you are English of the second class, he's French of the second class, etc., and you start imitating French, English, and so. That cannot be. So, and the second, what he called a resistencia economica. Destroy the kind of
economy
that they brought and put our own way of seeing the economy. Economy grows up where there is a great sense of culture, no, as well. And then the third, what he called a resistencia politica. No? Political resistance means we have to put out this way of they wanting us to be, no, and try to think strategically what we want and the project we want to make together, no, as Africans, according to our reality, and how we can dialogue with the world for that, etc. And then the last, which is what he didn't want at all, is the resistance armada. He said, we had to fight because the Portuguese refused all kind of dialogue. And they said there's no way to dialogue with it. So, and he said, since they was always using guns, armaments, and those armaments was given by the NATO, we have we are obliged to take arms to fight for our independence. But the important thing is that we have an objective. So the culture is the beginning for our process of independence.
Not political independence.
No.
Culture.
Culture is the beginning, the medium, and the end of our struggle, political struggle for independence. We want to be Africans, no? No? And then, as Africans, free, we want to be also in dialogue with the rest of other people, no? As human beings, simple. So, this is what Cabral did. Culture as the instrument, no, to liberate Africans, no, give a sort kind of resurrection of our culture.
Is it working? Are we getting there?
Let him say that, okay, if you look at what he did, he worked a lot with the simple people. And in fact, those who had guns in hand were the simple people. The majority of the population that didn't even went to schools. But at the same time, they knew why they had these guns in hands. And they knew they were fighting for the future. And the future was my generation, your generation. No? in order to be able to go to school, which is that the colonizers never allowed it before. But the problem now is that after the independence, no, those values as a cultural resistance, economic resistance, and political resistance, we forgot about all these values, and we start considering all these people just when we say the freedom fighter, we just remember that they had a gun in hand. So we consider them as just people that spend their life just killing, no values.
Whatsoever. We forget that independence was a process.
It was a process. So, but the Cabral is, did, and the process is there. He wrote, he left everything right. So I said, by the time we are in crisis today, let us go
back,
no, and see.
What was the vision?
What was the vision? And how can we take the spirit of this vision in order to project ourselves tomorrow, not just as a Guineans, but first of all as an African, because I'm an African from Guinea-Bissau. But the first reality is that I'm African, because old Africa was fighting in somehow. That's why we won this war. And this is very important. So that's why we, in for me, the Pan-Africanism was that. I'm not a sub-Saharan African. No, I'm an African from Guinea-Bissau. Not Guinea-Bissau and then African. No. And we start forgetting these things today. And this is bringing a lot of problems. When we see other people are uniting, we keep disuniting. No. So in this sense, I think Cabral still have a lot to teach us, no, in this current situation.
Professor, what about his relationship with the church?
The relationship with the church was always, he was the one, the kind of person that was always very pragmatic. No, he knew that the Portuguese were so much Catholic people. So he knew also the whole process of independence will never come without the collaboration of the church itself. That's why he never closed any kind of doors, because he keeps saying always also that we had never been communists or whatever. What we ask is help, and we ask both of them. We ask the Soviet Union, but we also ask the rest of Europeans, and in fact, those who invest a lot with the North Europe in my country, especially after the independence, because they never recognize this foolishness that about the colonization, etc.
Professor Filomeno Lopez on Family.
You have been listening to Family with Father Paul Samasumo.
Hello, dear listeners. This is the Africa Service of Vatican Radio, the Pope's Radio. We want to start by thanking you for being such an important part of our radio family. We would love to hear from you. Is there something you'd like us to feature more? Share your thoughts and let us know how we are reaching you, whether on shortwave radio, on FM, digital radio, or through our daily podcast. Also tell us from where you are listening and from which of the local radio stations that are rebroadcasting our program. You can text or WhatsApp us at +39 331 759 3275 or email us at inglese.africa@spc.va. That is INGLESE for Inglese. If you miss out on our radio broadcast, you can download the podcast within an hour after it goes on air at 16:30 GMT between the months of October and March, and at 17:30 GMT between April and October. Just go to www.vaticannews.va/en. You will see the podcast symbol on the top right-hand side of the website. Click on it and then choose English for Africa. You can also download our Vatican News app from the App Store or from Google Play Store to listen to the live broadcast, which is also available from our website. You're tuned to the Africa Service of Vatican Radio. This is the Africa Service of Vatican Radio, and I am Kanyanta Godfrey Kampamba. Praised be Jesus Christ. Laudetur Jesus Christus.